What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are here with me today. Oh, we have a wonderful show in store for you today with a woman I'm like instantly in love with, even though we just met a short time ago. I think you're going to love her too. She's really right up our alley. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed your Labor Day last week. Time for us to kind of come back. Everyone's coming back to work, getting back into the groove of things. That last marathon stretch now till the end of the year. We got some really great shows in store for you. Just to let you know, I'm like booked up with guests into November now, so it's gonna be a busy fall, I can tell already. So I know 2 weeks now, actually for 3 weeks, because the last show I did, I didn't do my quotes of the week. I did quotes from Wayne Dyer to honor his passing. But today we do have, once again, our quotes from the universe and from Abraham. Let's see what the universe and Abraham have in store for us today. From Mike Dooley and the universe. Everything is so awesome, so fantastic, could not possibly be better, over the top, off the chain, and out of the park, in your life, right now. Trust me, the universe. Ooh, I think the universe having a little bit of fun with us today. Let's see what Abraham has to say. When people thought the world was flat, it wasn't that their thinking was distorted. The data that they were collecting gave them that information. It was that they were not broadsided enough to step back far enough to see the big picture. And that's what we see with so many of you. You are so close to the reality that you are creating that sometimes you can't see the bigger picture. Abraham. Quite interesting. And actually, these two quotes go together so well because it is when we can step back and pull back and get a broader perspective of what's going on in our life that we realize things could not possibly be better and that they actually are perfect exactly the way they are, even if it doesn't feel like it, even if it doesn't seem like it at the time. This is not to say that we do not experience contrast. This is not to say that there aren't things that are brought up to us that don't feel right to us and we want to change, but that's part of the journey. That's part of the unfoldment of the universe. The more we experience, the more we live, the more we interact with each other, the more we learn about that much more, clarifying what it is that we want to manifest, clarifying what it is we want to see in our lives and in the world. And it's all perfect. It just doesn't necessarily feel that way in the moment. However, when we can step back and take the judgment out of what we're experiencing right at that time, that then it becomes a little easier, a little softer, takes a little less effort to kind of get through what we're going through. And then it's once we're at the other side, and then sometimes even after we're out the other side for quite a while and we're able to look back and reflect, we can say, ooh, you know what? that I really grew a lot from this experience. Sometimes we even at the time we're going through something we think is like so god awful, and then when we come through with it in 5-10 years later, we actually look back and laugh. And I always say, why do we have to take 5-10 years to look back on things and laugh? Why don't we just do a little bit more of it in the moment? Because things actually really are pretty funny when you think about it. You know the old quote, you know, God is the universe's greatest comedian playing to an audience that doesn't want to laugh. So if we just look for a little bit more of the humor in life, it makes going through everything so much easier. So, two wonderful quotes of the day. As always, I think rather apropos for who my guest is for that day. And today, it is my extreme pleasure to welcome Jennifer Brown. Jennifer is the founder and CEO of Jennifer Brown Consulting, which is a certified woman-owned and LGBT-owned strategic leadership and diversity consulting firm specializing in the future of the workforce and workplace, and dedicated to building more inclusive organization where all kinds of talent can feel welcomed, valued, respected, and heard. Based in New York City and maintaining a global team, the company, founded in 2006, partners with human resources, talent management, D&I, and business leadership. D&I, what's D&I?
Diversity and inclusion.
Diversity, inclusion, and business leadership on change management efforts related to human capital, including the design, development, and facilitation of customized interactive classroom and online learning environments, and is known as the creator of the ERG progression model. What's ERG?
Those are called employee resource groups, and I'll talk a little bit later about what those are.
Wonderful. And it's a proprietary development tool that facilitates and transformation of ERGs into true business partners. Employer of choice clients include such organizations as Cisco, Toyota Financial Services, Wells Fargo, Thomson Reuters, AXA, Disney, New York Life, Target, and many of the Fortune 500. Which of these kind of doesn't fit? I mean, Cisco Financial, AXA, Thomas Reuters, Disney? Okay. Target? Okay. So it's my extreme pleasure to welcome Jennifer to the Conscious Consultant Hour. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you so much, Sam.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. You're a fellow entrepreneur running a small business that I know it's runs our lives are overwhelmed sometimes with running a business, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No 2 days are the same, which I love.
Yes. So I'm curious, did you always kind of have an entrepreneurial spirit when you were a kid? I mean, I personally, I was selling newspapers and bars when I was a little kid to make extra money and doing all kinds of things. How about yourself?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was entrepreneurial spirit. I'd say I was always probably a change agent, somebody that really wanted to make the world better, be a catalyst, be in front of people. I can really remember as a very small kid wanting to be on the stage.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I didn't really understand what my purpose would be on the stage.
Right.
And that's what has come clear, obviously, over the years.
Right. So you actually have a little bit of a theatrical background, right?
I do. I do. Yeah. So I came to New York. I was in nonprofit management in my 20s and making the world a better place. Mm-hmm. But I have always been a musician, and I grew up in a musical family. So I had to go to New York to make it. I just had to. I call it scratching the itch. You know, from Boston, but I'm originally from California.
Okay.
So I had come east for college, and I moved to Boston, and I loved working for nonprofits. And I thought that would be, speaking of all those crazy corporate names on my bio now, I never would have believed that I would be working for companies even of that size and of that nature, being somebody who's really passionate about making the world better.
Right.
However, I'll get into a little bit later why actually it's like an incredible place to make the world better.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so I moved to New York to be an opera singer, and I finished a master's degree at Manhattan School of Music, and I went and became an equity card carrying member, and I had an agent, and I was doing music theater and opera auditions and doing some off-Broadway. Mm-hmm. Some regional stuff. And then, do you want me to keep going on what happened at that point? Or we get into that a little later?
but I just find the universe like such a fascinating place, because if you had become a successful opera singer or a successful performer, you would never be doing the important work that you're doing today.
Exactly.
So I'm just curious, like, when you sort of decided to not pursue that performing career, there must have been like a bit of disappointment or a bit of, you know, angst over, you know, wanting to mm-hmm. be on that stage and be famous. But now, kind of, you know, having made that shift and looking back on it, you're probably a little grateful about that.
I am. It was such a gift in disguise. And to your point yeah. around how do we look at our lives and what's happening and how we're suffering or choosing to interpret that whatever's happening to us should lead to suffering.
Yes.
It was suffering at the time. And what happened is I injured my voice through training and just the intensity of that life. And yes. I ended up having to have two vocal surgeries a year apart. And I literally, my voice was taken from me. My singing voice, my ability to do 8 shows a week, the stamina that's required in that field. And it was heartbreaking. I thought it was the deepest point that I could reach, and it really was. However, I was young, you know, and what I realized many years since all of that is it was such a gift, because my voice had to come out. I mean, the question is how and in what form, and what did I have to say? Was it just a matter of artistic expression, or was there a message that was really important that I could then use that voice, and whatever we're defining that as,
right?
Was that the most important thing? And it's turned out that I was meant to use my voice, just not as a singer. I was meant to give voice to others and use my story to do that. And that's what I get to do every day. So it's such a gift.
And so what was the inspiration for getting into this diversity and inclusion aspect of business?
Yeah. So when I had to start a new career, and another friend who had been a performer said, you'd be a great trainer. You're great in front of audiences. You're smart. You enjoy connecting with people. So I ended up getting a second master's degree in organizational development. And it was, I felt I'd found my people. They were people who love other people, the potential of humans, the sort of dysfunctions of the workplace and how we could make that better, and the ability to facilitate adult learning, which is really very fun for me. So I found this other second career that was just, I felt like another gift. The diversity inclusion piece came because I also was closeted as a gay person through my 20s and through my performing career, frankly, and into my corporate career in the second phase. And in meeting people who were activists and advocates internally in organizations and all the banks in New York, I realized this was an important part of my toolkit and my arsenal that I could bring as a change agent if I were to embrace it and be comfortable with it and integrate it into my organizational development skills. So what ended up happening is the company kind of morphed around me and my own personal story and what was important to me. We ended up kind of building the company and starting to work on diversity strategies for all these larger companies. And that was just who I had in my network.
So you were kind of already doing sort of human resources, human capital development. And then as you became sort of more comfortable to come out and really say who you were as a unique and authentic individual. So the business changed around that. It's still, I mean, when you made that choice, it still must have not been a very easy choice to make, was it?
No, it was tricky. I could have kept going, and I'm such a type A. I mean, I would continue to apply myself and hang in there and say, I made a commitment to this and I've got to see it through. But I guess the fear of being thwarted from a messaging perspective was so terrifying to me. The thought of not being able to have a channel in which to express myself, I think on a deeper level, was a worse fear, I think, than not being able to sing as a living. So once I think once I discovered that, but it was very difficult. I mean, I had to call my agent and say, don't call me anymore. I had to give up my equity card. I said, I'm going dark for a while. And I went and I got a job at a .com, because that was what was going on at the time. And I just hit out and licked my wounds and was very sad and mourned the end of that dream, not knowing what was next, but taking sort of one step at a time and trying to listen to the universe around, you know, I know I'm going to get the answer here. I'm just going to need to listen. That's all I need to do right now. And really, I think I was hopefully a little patient with myself, but it can be really hard. It's a judgmental thing when you have vocal surgery. It's a secret that you don't want to tell anyone. Yeah. You get judged for it. You won't get cast. Yeah. Nobody talks about it. And somehow something you did to yourself, you know, through sort of a you know, lack of discipline, et cetera. So I was very hard on myself about what happened. Yet, in hindsight, I'm not sure that was necessary. Is it ever necessary?
Not. No, we're always much, much harder on ourselves than we ever need to be. Well, I really want to applaud you for your bravery, because I'm sure there are a lot of people who probably felt the same way, but were never able to kind of take that step forward, or at least not until maybe much later in their life, in their career.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break, when we come back, let's talk a little bit more about the importance of diversity and inclusion, and why it's such a passion for you. I mean, outside of sort of the personal relationship, but why you see it as being so important in the workplace, you know, especially today in 2015. Mm-hmm. Compared to even the past.
Yes.
So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and my guest this hour is Jennifer Brown, CEO and founder of Jennifer Brown Consulting, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
What are the latest travel trends? How can travel be a part of your overall health and wellness plan? This is William Paris, lifestyle travel consultant, and your host on Travel and Wellness Today. Join me on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time for travel chat, travel tips, and travel news updates. That's on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we're talking with Jennifer Brown about diversity and inclusion. So after you've kind of went through this turmoil in your life, and you changed from your singing career to sort of human capital development, and then really made a very conscious choice to focus on diversity and inclusion, do you remember what it was like when you first started to kind of come out and say, like, this is the work I'm doing now?
I do. It depended what I was teaching. So as somebody who facilitates for a living, I would stand in front of the room, and if I were teaching, say, presentation skills, which is what I started, I mean, it makes perfect sense for a performer.
Yeah.
I sort of cut my teeth, actually, on leading sessions where I was videotaping people, giving them feedback, helping them structure their message, but also helping them use the room and the space and their body and their vocal.
You guys all hearing this? I have to be like extra on my ball today.
That's right. Watch it. I'll give you a list of feedback.
Wonderful.
So it was really fun, but I think being LGBT wasn't germane, or at least I didn't think it was, right? But what I started to evolve to was, after leading session after session with managers and executives in different companies, I started to realize that my voice and my experience, not just as a practitioner, but who I am and what I've lived through as an employee who was making the choice to be closeted, was so important. It was such an important piece to bring up and to make sure that people considered.
Right.
And I knew that there was so much work to be done in organizations to create an open environment for everyone, not just LGBT people, but everyone to, as we say, bring their full selves to work. And so I started to form a point of view, I think, from all the brokenness that mm-hmm. I was witness to day after day, listening to managers and organizations around, I mean, a whole host of things,
right.
You know, how hierarchical it is, mm-hmm. how they could, you know, they weren't listened to, taken seriously, how mm-hmm. they were frustrated, thwarted, not, you know, not, it wasn't really diversity related, but right. in a way, all paths kind of lead back to
it
diversity.
It sounds more like corporate culture related.
It is. It's cultural challenges. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when you first started to do this, what was the kind of reaction you got from the people who, let's say, had known you as doing just, you know, human resource development presentation skills, and now you're doing this other stuff? Were they kind of, were they confused? Were they kind of negative? Or were they like, oh, that's good, we need that?
Yeah, I think it was very supportive. I sort of switched worlds. Mm. I had to kind of hop over to a whole different realm,
okay.
which is fine. Mm-hmm. I see, you know, our lives are periods of incubation
yes.
and becoming. And once you're incubated and you're ready to bust out of the cocoon, you've learned what
right.
you need to learn from the phase. And then you jump into the next stream and start swimming.
Right.
So I learned everything I needed to facilitate adults and their learning. And I've learned tons of context about the organization, mm. However we define it.
Right.
But I think I was ready to add my personal experience to the mix as context and as a lens that
right.
I was comfortable speaking from. And I also got the moral authority, I think, to feel good about standing up when I knew what all my friends were going through mm. on Wall Street, you know, and in the corporate
yeah.
sphere
yeah.
and how they were struggling to really get their voice heard. But I knew that companies really wanted to hear that voice. And so
oh.
that was the piece, I think, that gave me permission in my heart and mind to say, I'm a messenger, and
right.
the information I can provide is going to motivate people to actually stand up and be heard because
right.
it's being welcomed. Now,
right.
doesn't mean there were no wrinkles in the process.
Of course, of course. How long ago was that?
I would say this was, I started the company 10 years ago. I think we started to really focus on diversity 6 or 7 years ago. And
okay.
I sort of discovered this whole world of practitioners and mm. trainers and people who'd been facilitating on this for 25 years. So all the pieces started to make sense. And I realized actually what makes us unique is we apply diversity practices, but through an organizational change mm. lens, meaning
right.
it's not just a what we call one and done. It's sort of thinking about a system holistically and saying,
right.
okay, what are all the pieces that need to be in place? Diversity is a tricky thing. It's
yeah.
It's subtle and it's kind of all around you. It's like in the air you breathe
right.
when you're at a company.
It's pervasive and it's, yeah, it's just, it's there everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think companies were more open to kind of hear this message now because of, I don't know, just the change in society, or because we've become more of a global economy and there's more pressure now for organizations to really operate in the best environment possible?
Yeah, I think there's a bit what we call the business case, right?
Right.
And most leaders, although I find leaders all the time that have no idea what I'm talking about
yeah.
about this, but when we try to really boil it down, it's the workforce. So your mm. workforce is changing, and specifically who you're trying to recruit looks mm. different than your executive team. So that's
right.
a disconnect. When you work so hard and you pay so much and you put so many resources to bringing in the best talent, but they arrive and they
right.
look around them
right.
or they hear jokes being told and nobody saying anything
yeah.
or they look at the board and they see no women and no people of color and there's no out executives. This younger generation takes diversity much more for granted. It's more embedded in the world they've grown up in
yeah.
and they have higher expectations, but organizations are really lagging behind.
Right.
So just when you look around you, you say, you know, maybe I'm not welcome here because I don't see somebody that looks like me,
right.
whose career I can grow into.
Is this something you think started with the millennials, or is it like Gen Y, Gen X?
It's, you know, Gen X, poor Gen X.
Yeah.
That's my generation. We're the forgotten children.
right.
We're, you know, we're half the size of the baby boomers and
right.
Gen Y millennials. We have not been, we just haven't had the critical mass, I think, to make our needs known and to have the
right.
company come back to us and take that seriously. For some
right.
reason, we've kind of been overlooked. I think it's the power of the baby boomers as well, who are staying
yeah.
in the workforce a lot longer.
Yes.
They are parking it, you know, for economic reasons or whatever. They're not done. I mean, they're
right.
aging. They're super smart. They've got tons of institutional knowledge. They're sticking around because of financial reasons, whatever. And I understand that. So it's creating a bottleneck for my generation to really move up the chain and also
right.
to have bigger jobs and, you know, say what we want to say. So Gen Y coming along behind us has kind of demanded change. You know, they've done it in a different way.
Right.
They've done it in a very entitled way, and that's the word that's associated with them a lot. Right. But I always say to leaders I work with, Gen Xers and baby boomers, this is what we want, actually.
Right.
We just couldn't quite... We couldn't quite shape the workplace in the way that they are very clearly asking for it to change.
Right,
and
right.
This is all good. It right. is all, I don't disagree with a single, I mean, maybe, you know, they shouldn't be able to have lunch with the CEO
right.
tomorrow, which is the big joke, but everything else, I right, and yeah. why not? I
right.
think actually we should be able to reach our CEO and say, I want to know that person. Why not?
Right, right. And for so many reasons, I mean, for loyalty, for understanding, for motivation and wanting to know like people really care. And, you know, I had somebody on my show a couple of years ago who wrote a book all about the millennial generation and how, you know, they would just like not return from lunch if they felt like, you know, their managers really didn't care
That's
about
right.
them. You
That's
know, they
right.
would no, they have no fear of like, you know, hopping jobs and saying, you know, goodbye and, you know, bad references. Who cares? You know,
they'll always like, move home, too, if it doesn't work
right.
out. Mom and dad really want them to come home. So unlike our parents, I think, who were like, shoo.
Yeah,
get
out
of here.
Already. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's interesting how like all these different sort of trends and waves kind of coming together to a point where it's really in some ways you can call it like a more enlightened corporate culture evolving out of what's happening. Now, I know there are some people out there who are like, let's just tear everything down and start fresh. I'm a big believer that you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like there are some good things about how things work. There are some not necessarily so good things, but that's okay. Let's change the things we don't like and keep the things that we do like.
Totally. We say in consulting, meet the client where they're at, you know,
right.
and I think there's a ton to be leveraged that's to be proud of in a brand, you know, and I know
right.
lots of proud employees
yeah,
that
yeah.
feel very connected from a purpose standpoint
right.
to their employer.
And not necessarily from those brands you would expect. Like, you know, it's not surprising someone's proud to work at Apple Computers,
mm-hmm.
right? Because
yeah.
of the reputation. But I'm sure there are some other organizations you've worked with that it's, you know, people would like go, huh? When like somebody who's associated with that organization is proud to be there.
Absolutely. It's not just the consumer brands. It's some
yeah.
of the what we call B2B business to business brands. You know,
right.
It can be banks and financial services. It can be missile defense. I mean, there is
yeah.
crazy advanced diversity and inclusion stuff going on at my missile defense contractors like Raytheon and Lockheed Martin. They are doing really cutting edge work
wow.
around diversity. They are the kinds of companies that have programs just for white, straight, male executives talking about how they can learn to be advocates for inclusion.
Mm.
And they take them off site and they talk about this. I mean,
wow.
they really welcome in the what I call the majority that I don't think traditionally has been a
right.
part of the conversation.
Right.
And that's the work we need to do in
yeah.
order to take this to the mainstream. It
Absolutely.
Can't so much be the choir.
And I'm so glad to hear that because I actually had a business in the aerospace industry. It was an online database in the early .com days from like the 2000 to 2005, 2006, 2007. And one of the hardest parts for me as this like young upstart from New York was the defense industry. Let's face it. It is a good old boys network. It really is. And, you know, I was there like trying to make this work and showing them like this new way of getting information out and doing stuff. And it was such an uphill battle, like every single day until, you know, when the shuttle Columbia blew up, I said, like, that's it. I need to put
wow.
this to bed for now
yeah,
and,
for sure.
and wait because things aren't going to change. But, you know, I would say I've had businesses in many different industries, but the defense industry and aerospace, because it's very closely related, the most conservative industry I've ever seen, the least open to change, and the least open at that time, at least, to this idea of diversity and inclusion, even though there were tremendous government programs for them to use small businesses and for them to use minority women-owned businesses and all that stuff. So it was this weird juxtaposition of like that's where effort was being made, yet you weren't really seeing it in the day-to-day.
Right. And companies do, I think, a poor job internally communicating all the great things that they're doing. I think that continues to be a challenge. And the bigger the company, the more global the company, the more difficult it is to figure out, like, where are we doing good work with diversity inclusion, community outreach? What do we sponsor? What's our corporate social responsibility? I mean, it's up to a lot of us to try to decode these complex organizations and find our way to fellow advocates because they're there. I work with all of them. So to me, it's a really exciting moment. I think it's a great moment to take your platform as well and be assured that your voice needs to be heard and there's actually interest in an investment in hearing that voice.
Right. Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, let's talk about what did it take to kind of shift that mindset a little bit and you know, what are the challenges and what are the maybe some of the tools that you use to do that.
Sure.
And of course, if anybody has any questions, would like to ask Jennifer or myself any questions, please feel free to call in. Our call-in number is 877-480-4120. You're listening to The Conscious Consultant Hour, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern at TalkingAlternative.com.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and today we're waking humanity all around diversity and inclusion. So I'm curious, Jennifer, when you come into an organization and they hire you to help with this whole idea of diversity and inclusion, what are like some of the initial challenges that you normally have to deal with, and how do you go about shifting that mindset, that corporate culture, that consciousness around what it means to be inclusive and diverse in the workplace?
Right. So, you know, executives think they don't have anything to learn. So you have to figure out how are we going to help
them
trick
them into
learning? Learn. Yeah. Trick them into it. I'm pretty good at that. I'm like, guess what? You just learned, but they don't want to admit that they aren't competent in it, you know? And I think that's part of what needs to change as a side note, like that the leader is not able to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
I do this work for a living, and I'm learning every single day what I don't know about diversity and inclusion. You know, I come from my own lens. I come from an upper middle class background. If I walk in the room, people at all do not get my life right, actually, which is a very powerful teaching point, you know, and I get to come out and kind of startle everybody, and then they have the deer in the headlights moment, and it's all good. But I say, you know, I make assumptions still because we're all hardwired and we were all raised to have this shorthand around who is this person sitting across the table from me. And when I stand up and say, guess what? The white guys have a diversity story too. We need to find that, and we need to make sure we all understand, because we do understand what it feels to be excluded.
Right.
How do we though share that, talk about it, and how do we use it as a leadership tool? So, so I get to work with executives sometimes on bringing them along that journey. But my favorite part is probably focus groups. We enter an organization and we interview everyone. And we literally get the women together. We get the people of color together. We get Gen Y together. And we just talk about how do you experience this culture. And the amazing thing over and over again, no matter how progressive the company is, there are differences in terms of how women feel, an African-American employee might feel. Sure. And when they get into a room with each other, there are things that are said that they feel safe to say, and they could have never articulated them before, literally, but they're telling us. And so we get to take that and go and feed it back anonymously as a change tool right. with the powers that be.
And then are the executives often surprised?
Totally surprised. and sort of like, chagrined. I mean, they it's sort of a not under my watch. How could women in our organization feel like that? Here's the long list of ways that we support them.
Right.
And so it's this disconnect around, yes, but they're still feeling that they're under-supported right. or they're underrepresented right. or that they don't get the promotional opportunity. Right. So there's this perception versus reality aha right. moment.
And is that mostly because of not so much like what are the structures in place, but more because of the personalities of the individuals involved?
It can be both. Sometimes it's structural.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah, like for instance, say they're deciding who's going to get promoted. They do what we call talent reviews. So everybody right. looks at all the managers at a certain level and said, who's ready for promotion? You may not have any female or people of color talent in that pool. And nobody will say anything or notice anything or think to say, gee, we are not evaluating one woman today. And it's a question of increasing your sensitivity, and it's small things, but that's a structural thing that I think if an executive or a leader says, no, I will interview, mm-hmm. go back to the drawing board with your slate. Mm-hmm. I don't see any diverse candidates and mm-hmm. I want to interview. It's not quotas.
Right.
It's that, look, there's a lot of talent.
It's just kind of bringing the awareness
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, absolutely. But then it is also subtle sort of cultural behaviors. It's yeah. for LGBT people, of course, we're always watching out for, did the person say wife and husband versus partner, you know, and we're making a judgment around, does this person get it? Do they have cultural competency around my community?
Yeah.
Are they going to understand me and my life, or are they still using husband or wife? And I think it's small, and it's such a fixable thing.
Right. And it's not necessarily even something that they're consciously doing to be exclusive, but they just haven't been educated.
Exactly.
And it hasn't been brought to their awareness. And the more we kind of bring these issues up and bring it into people's awareness, they're like, oh, okay, I didn't know.
Yeah.
I can make that change.
Yeah.
Not a big deal.
Absolutely. And the funny thing is people are on board conceptually. It's more like, can you give me tools? I'm bought in. I'm willing.
Right.
Now I've got to get ready. I've got to prepare myself. And then how do I ask my team, do you feel heard and welcomed here? And cross that line of difference. And a lot of times if you're of a different background and you're asking the question, there's not an automatic trust about where you're coming from.
Yeah.
You know, there's not at all, this person has my best interests at heart. And so the person on the receiving end of this goes through a calculation around, can I trust this person? Mm. Are they going to hear me if I'm vulnerable? And what are they going to do with that information? Mm. And does my company care?
Mm.
So those are sort of, that's the math we go through when you're on the receiving end of that kind of conversation. Mm. And yet, I think to build competency, we have to ask the questions. We have to be curious. We have to say, I might be having this experience. You may be having a totally different experience.
Right.
If we could just get better at having those conversations, we could make better organizations.
Right. And that's true regardless of the size of the organization. Yeah. I mean, whether it's a small, medium, or large organization, that's a very important conversation.
I totally think it applies. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I know I have mostly women working for me. So our diversity is, where are the men?
You know, traveling in spiritual circles, I often find myself, I'm like one of three guys in a room of 30 women.
And we love having you. You're the right kind of guy. We'll have you anytime.
Thank you. I'm curious, like when an organization sort of says, like brings you on board and says, okay, yeah, we want to be more sensitive. We want to make this change. How long does it take to start to implement things and to actually, for the people to feel like, okay, yeah, I can be more open and express how I'm feeling about it? Because sometimes, as you just said, you know, they don't feel like they can really be heard or that they can trust these people now just because they're changing their tune.
Mm-hmm.
So how long does it take to build that trust? I'm sure it's different for every situation,
yeah.
but there must be some generalities.
Oh, boy. It takes a while. It depends how intentional the company leadership is about communicating it and where they communicate it and how authentically they communicate it.
Okay.
I also think we, as diverse talent, and I'll just kind of put myself in a bucket of that, we're always watching what the company is doing externally.
Mm.
And it, sometimes sometimes the criticism you can level at companies is they're trying to go after the diverse dollar, but they're not doing the work internally. So, but sometimes you'll have a company that does incredible work internally and has no external brand relating to how diversity friendly they are, or they're not going after diverse dollars and spend. So I think the perfect world, we've got a system that matches up. The internal matches the external. The words match the music. And that somebody sitting there can say, my company respects my community as customers, respects my community from a outreach perspective and recruitment perspective, and they're respecting my career as I grow internally here. And once those pieces are in place, it takes a while to kind of suss out, do I have kind of all three? And therefore, I think I feel safer to be myself and sort of uncover what makes me unique when I hear this and see this occurring around me on a regular basis. That's the other thing. You can't just, you know, communicate once.
It's not a one-time shot.
And it's got to be authentic. You know, I think I've seen a lot of CEOs or leaders stand up and sort of hit their talking points. And what I want them to do is share a story. I want them to be authentic and vulnerable. I want them to talk about how they're still learning, even though they're the CEO. And I think all of us at any level can say, teach me. You know, I really want to be better at this. I think that's very disarming for, you know, somebody who's having, you know, has traditionally been a quote unquote, the only one in the room or the minority in the equation.
And do you have maybe an example or a case study or story about how this change has really helped an organization, like just be a better business in a way?
I think there's I don't know if they segment their shoppers and consumers, you know, in a retail outlet like Target, but they, you know, they have Pride Month merchandise and they sell, people love the Target brand, right? And if you think that 10% of your customer base is LGBT, that's a lot of dollars that you can capture just by doing the right thing and showing up in the right way in the world, because everybody is watching, whether you're an employee or you're a customer deciding where you're going to spend that dollar. Diverse talent is constantly assessing the company they're spending with because they want to see that they mean what they say and that they are saying the right things and they're backing it up with action. So, and that can actually extend to the sociopolitical economic realm, like Salesforce coming into Indiana around the Religious Freedoms Act situation and saying, look, we employ a lot of people here. And if we need to take our business elsewhere because we don't feel that you're making the right decisions for equality and inclusion, that doesn't square with our cultural values. So that really hit the state in its pocket. And it forced some action. So that this is why I get excited about CEOs weighing in on social issues, where they feel comfortable. Of course, we had the Apple, and boy, bless him, he's just been incredible, the new CEO coming out and then putting Apple on the map, who wasn't really, honestly, I didn't know Apple before his tenure, but I don't think that actually diversity and inclusion was something they talked about as an enabler. And a, I mean, maybe we felt the brand was really progressive, but I don't know if it was so intentional. And then they went from like zero to 60 and they had like 1,000 people at Pride in San Francisco. And I mean, it just like blew the doors off. And they did it so beautifully, like they do everything. But, you know, it wasn't always that way. I mean, I think if you talk to Steve Jobs about diversity, I don't know what he really would have said about it. He probably needed a little coaching.
I don't know, but I imagine, you know, Silicon Valley and California, they were in the heart of it. Plus, I don't know.
Who knows? They struggle. They struggle too with diversity. I mean, look at the numbers coming out of, you know, they've got 3% African Americans at a lot of the tech companies. They've got women. The numbers of women percentage wise are in the teens in many of them. So actually they're very much lagging, even though product wise and innovation wise, they are very progressive cultures in many ways. And I love working with tech companies. I love it because they're smart. They want to understand the concepts. I think they're
tech
all
companies
about the work.
Tend to also be more flexible and nimble and more open to change and different things, because they're all about change. They're all about making things change.
Absolutely.
And you know, this whole idea of just you know, that to me, the biggest vote we get to make is the vote we do with how we spend our dollars. And that, you know, as people are becoming more aware of what are the corporate cultures of the companies that we decide to use, that, you know, oh, well, this company doesn't really support diversity. This company does. I'm going to shift my spending there. Or, you know, just like, you know, is it organic or non-organic? Mm-hmm, you know, is is it eco-friendly, not eco-friendly? Are this company giving back to the planet or not giving back to the planet?
Absolutely.
Like all of these kinds of things that are our biggest way of kind of supporting these companies is where do we decide to spend
Absolutely
our dollars?
Agree.
And I think that's not just on a consumer level, but can also be on a B2B level, because even small and mid-sized companies who are led by individuals that have certain values themselves may decide to shift
totally
where they
like. We're a diverse supplier, and we want to do business with partners
players.
That understand.
Yeah.
So we sell to corporate who want to know us because they want diversity in their supply chain. So it's really cool also what's happening in that whole space too.
Wonderful, wonderful. Okay, believe it or not, the hour goes by so fast. Time for our last commercial break of the hour. When we come back, why don't we talk a little bit about the future of the workforce and the workplace? Like, this is where we are now. Let's take a little peek into the future and see where we're going.
Wonderful.
So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, with my guest, Jennifer Brown, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Dude. Transforming Tuesday nights from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on TalkingAlternative.com. It's the Dudes of Disruption.
The Dudes of Disruption is a new show geared toward the global tribe of disruptors who are committed to interrupting the automatic ways of their lives so they go out and leave their mark on the world powerfully.
Consider every Tuesday night, 8 to 9 Eastern on TalkingAlternative.com, forever disrupted. The Dudes of Disruption, disrupting your automatics.
Dude.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. My guest this hour has been Jennifer Brown of Jennifer Brown Consulting, talking all about diversity and inclusion in the workforce. So we've been talking kind of about like the past and kind of how we got to where we are today. Where do you see things going 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 15 years from now? Do you think that there won't be a need for your services?
I wonder. I do wonder that. I think millennials are ushering in a different definition of diversity. So when we had these employee resource groups you mentioned earlier, ERGs, they were along identity lines. So they were women's group, they were an African-American group, Hispanic group, disabilities group. But there's more and more what we're calling allies that are coming into these groups. So what's happening now is the, especially the younger folks are allies for inclusion generally. I mean, they really want to, they're very altruistic as a generation. And so they are getting involved to the point where they're actually outnumbering the numbers of diverse folks in the groups, which is interesting.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's sort of busting the doors open. Like in gay groups that I know of in corporate America, there's maybe 80% heterosexual allies that make up the membership.
Really?
Yeah. So we wanted this. I mean, this is getting to the majority, I think. And we needed help because I think you can only be the advocate for so long.
Right.
That's a little perilous in terms of people associating you with a community. And that can be still a little bit dangerous.
There's fear
around that. So I think that's going to bring a sea change. The other thing is organizations.
So do you think we're pretty close to that tipping point?
Boy, we still have so much work to do. I think organizations are still very hierarchical. They're very, like, you look at the org charts, they're mostly vertical. There's not a structure that enables true collaboration and ideas to bubble up from the bottom and the middle. And I think companies are going to have to figure out, and maybe diversity and diverse voices holds one of the keys around sort of rejiggering our organizational structures.
So I interrupted you. You're about to go off.
Oh, I don't remember. Well, we're talking about the future.
Yeah, the future.
I think the other thing is the traditional job, and as determined and defined as it is, I think this whole freelancer world and reality, as much as we're talking about companies and loyalty and how do we get people to stay, I think the value proposition has to be stronger to stay. It's not as strong as it needs to be, and the allure of working for yourself, which is what I've chosen and all of my folks that work for me, is of course that you can shape as a contractor, you can shape your life, you can shape the kinds of projects you work on, you have the freedom to have your work-life balance, and
your organization, I mean, you actually implement, you walk your talk, so maybe you talk for just a minute about like how your organization is structured and how you work, because you have people you haven't even met. This blows my mind that you have employees you haven't even been in the same room.
I haven't seen for like a year and a half. Yeah, I know. I miss them. We pass like in airports and we're like, hey, high five. Yeah, we work completely virtually. We're using all the tools. I allow people to and encourage them to choose their hours, and they can say no to things that I ask them for help on. They can take on as much as they need. You know, as the owner, things eventually fall back to me if they don't, you know. But I kind of believe, because I was subject to roles that didn't feel like a fit for me for so long. And I think that was part of my creative artist being stifled. And it was part of me trying to assimilate to something that didn't feel like home. So I think for all of us, I want my folks to feel they're loving what they do. They're working in their sweet spot. And it's my job as a leader to kind of fill in the blanks around that. And sometimes it can be tough. We're all in different time zones. We all have part-time schedules.
What would you say is the biggest challenge with this kind of structure?
I think the structure challenge is feedback. I think being able to be looking over somebody's shoulder or sitting next to them, talking about what they're doing, maybe giving them ideas, that whole ability to have collaboration in the creation of solutions is, I think, more difficult. Okay. We all work in a lot of isolation, and then we sort of come together and review. Yeah. So if I could have my druthers, we'd be in each other's hearts and minds collaboratively, but it's just really difficult to mimic that, even with all the great tools that are out there. And I think just community. I mean, we would have fun together. We'd be able to celebrate wins. You know, we end up at, like, putting a little emoticon for a champagne glass in Skype and saying, great job and great news and nicely done and virtual cheers, you know, and then we're sort of on to the next. So it's a little crazy, but I know that it's the way of the future. And I think we are taking our own medicine and trying to figure out how do you do this. But I think there's something to be learned.
What do you think is your own personal challenge for the future?
Oh, my challenge is I want to reach more people. I need to be the evangelist.
Okay.
And being the evangelist means you're not in front of a computer screen every day.
Right.
You know, you are out talking to people, influencing people. You're trying to influence people with influence.
Right.
That's where I see my unique role is being able to be in that room.
Right.
And it's probably, maybe it's executives, maybe it's the white guys, maybe it's the folks that really need to hear the message from a person like me in my way of
getting
sharing it.
TED Talk out there.
Yeah, getting the talk out there, writing the book, being accessible on video. I think we're very much of a boutique consulting shop, and we sort of roll up our sleeves and do really awesome work, but it's very company specific and sort of hard to see. I think we need to elevate our message, and we need to reach that person that's the only diverse person in a country. I mean, we come across them all the time, and they say they're just hungry for community. And I think sometimes they'll say to me, I'm so glad you exist. Just keep going. Just keep running as fast as you can.
Wonderful.
Keep doing that work. And, you know, they want to work for us. They definitely want to jump over. And there's just so much, there's so much pent up want to connect into wherever you're working. I mean, work is so personal for so many of us. We want to give our
gifts. So much of our identity tends to be tied up in our work.
Right.
I mean, I'm here always about raising people's consciousness and getting their identity to be something greater than their work. And then the work is really only one aspect of what we do, but still sort of traditionally, you know, when you meet somebody at a party, you know, what's the first thing you usually say to them, right? It's, what do you do?
Right.
In other words, what's your work?
Uh-huh.
And we're all so much more than our work.
But it's so American, too. I feel like we are total workaholics, and yet I think we do connect in on a very different level. I mean, I know work after a 12 or 14 hour day, like, you know, when you still feel energized and then you go to a fundraiser that's related to your work, you know, it's it can be the challenge of virtual working like we are too is boundaries. I mean, I think I work out of my home and all of us do. And, I will work like crazy hours and just go into a zone. And I think to the detriment of the balance that a lot of us, and I see that as a cultural thing. I wonder about what it's like to be European and have 8 weeks off or have a 35 hour week. Like, would you be able to connect in and kind of give that extra and create something in that context?
Well, you know, it's one of the things I talk about now and then on the show is about the Buddhist concept that I learned from Geshe Michael Roach of who wrote this book, The Diamond Cutter, highly recommended, about like taking a day off in the middle of a week.
Mm.
No phone calls, no technology, nothing related to work, just to go out there and to give your mind some diversity, to think about nature, do something fun, whatever, so that when you come back Thursday morning, you're refreshed, renewed, you can see everything with a new perspective and new eyes. And that his thing was that you're actually more productive this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, just with personal coaching clients, I see they get burnt out, like work so much. And I'm like, when do you give yourself free time that's unscheduled, that's you know, unstructured, just to play? And almost nobody does.
I know. And some companies are starting to do the Google thing, which is the 20% of your time, go play. We don't want you here. We don't want you working on deliverables. So I think the criticism of the new world of work and the always on culture and the working from home thing is it sort of, you know, you might be able to take your kid to school or pick them up or do other things, but then you're back online at night.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a different level of balance challenge that we all have now where we're trying to live in an integrated way.
Yeah.
And then you have companies who are wiping out floors of their offices and just creating open office plans where you have to sign out.
Oh, really?
You have to sign out a cube or a desk, you know, and so most of the space is you have a locker and then you've got common areas. And this has caused a lot of consternation. I think probably especially with the older generations, but I think with a lot of people, like introverts really struggle with that kind of open office plan. And so the dream of kind of restructuring our physical architecture of our work environment in the office, there are some things that are going really well there. And then I think there are some things we still haven't quite figured out.
Sounds like making a co-working an internal co-working space for your employees. That's really fascinating because I know so many individual entrepreneurs who love going to co-working spaces like The Yard or WeWork, and because they don't want to be at home just working by themselves, even though they're not part of a big company.
So they need the collaboration.
Yeah,
they need to be able to go to the kitchen and chat with somebody, talk about relaxing. That sort of allows your brain to recalibrate and then feel refreshed. Wonderful. So yeah, I think there's something to those spaces, but corporate America is totally going for that, I think. And I don't know, it's almost leading to a little more isolation. It's like now we're fighting over who signed out that desk and who, you know, whose favorite spot is where, and nobody talks to each other. Everyone's got their headphones in as they're working, so they physically might be in the office, but they're somewhere else. So, you know, where is the sense of community related to the company, which is where we sort of started this conversation, right? Like, what does it mean to work for this company, and where's the esprit de corps here that connects us together? And that's going to continue to be a challenge. I think diverse networks are a great way to keep that tether to the company.
Wonderful. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Unfortunately, we're out of time. If people would like to learn more about you, get in touch with you, how would they contact you?
Absolutely. So please go to our website, which is jenniferbrownconsulting.com. We've got a lot of white papers you can read on the kinds of topics we've talked about today. Generational diversity, LGBT, executive leadership with diversity. Follow me on Twitter, which is at Jennifer Brown. I don't know how I got that handle, but I did.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And our LinkedIn, you can look me up and the company up on LinkedIn and Facebook as well, and or drop us an email. We're always reachable, info@jenniferbrownconsulting.com.
Wonderful.
And we'd, of course, be happy to help you, whatever your size of organization. If you are serious about this and you are passionate, and I don't think there is an organization that shouldn't be thinking about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Jennifer. It's
Thank
been a pleasure
you.
Having you here. I wish you all the success
Thanks
in the world.
Thanks so much.
And I love the work that you're doing.
Thanks
and,
so much,
and I
Sam.
Appreciate the time. So everybody, thank you for listening. As I mentioned before, Kevin Barbaro is taking a little bit of break from his show, but Coffee Talk 3.0 will be coming back as Coffee Talk 4.0 or 4.D or 4D or something. So you can stay tuned, but we still got some of his in the replay. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you on a path of consciousness or spirit? Is personal or spiritual empowerment important to you? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and I am here to answer your questions and bring you experts in all areas of life to raise your awareness and support you in your evolution. Tune in at my new time, Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern on www.talkradio.nyc. That's Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at MontyTaylor.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.TalkingAlternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Talking Alternative.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern at TalkingAlternative.com.
Come, join us for the 14th Annual Vigil for International Peace and Ecology on Sunday, September 20th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. A celebration of live music and dance performances, art installations, and a World Peace Flag Ceremony that celebrates the United Nations International Day of Peace. That's Sunday, September 20th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Park, Nuremberg, Banshell by the Bethesda Fountain. For more information or to volunteer, go to vigilforinternationalpeace.org. That's number 4 in the URL. Or call 646-765-7890. That's 646-765-7890. See you there.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.